Today, I had a real hard time trying to figure out exactly how to maybe categorize chapter 22. You see on the heading, it just says various laws. I mean, it's in 21, various laws, and then it kind of goes through. We're going to be talking about things like cross-dressing, wearing a polyester cotton blend clothing.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about incest and rape and don't have sex with your mother. These are all important laws that I think are going to be needed for us. I was going through it all and I found out that I think if I could, and I had to choose one for the newsletter that went out. Here's the two thoughts for today. One, who are you when no one is looking? And two, are boundaries from God good? Those are the two topics. Who are you when you're not, when no one's looking? And what about boundaries? Do we have healthy boundaries? Now, this is important because I think all of us do in fact have two separate persona that often gets out into the world. The first one is what everyone sees. It's when people are looking, we often tend to have a much better attitude, a much better morality. We know that because people are watching, we want to impress other people. But then, when the lights are off, when no one is looking, how are you when it comes to morality? For instance, you're walking along in SeaWorld, and as you're walking along by yourself because you love to see the animals all on your own, you come across a $100 bill. And you what's the first thing you do when you see that $100 bill on the ground?
Excitement.
Oh, excitement. Oh, yeah. Nana wants $100. You pick it up? That's what I do. I look around like, is someone frantically looking around? But I also do it for another reason, because I look around and if no one is looking, then I pick it up. Same scenario. You're in SeaWorld. This time you're with your family or your friends, because who can go visit Shamu by yourself? That's boring. No, it'd be much better with a lot of friends. So you're there with your friends and you come across a $100 bill. Now what do you do?
Excitement
with your friends. Like, this could get us like two beers at SeaWorld, you know, right? Do they sell beer at SeaWorld? I don't even know. They do? Okay, yeah. Like everywhere sells it now. But there's a little bit difference because usually at that point there's not like a mad dash or a jump onto the money, right? Someone will eventually say, well, maybe we should find out who dropped this, right? Right? Someone in the friend group's gonna, and you wanna seem good and righteous. I mean, you're like, well, we are going to Searchlight tomorrow, so, you know, we should probably do what's right. When people are watching, we tend to do things with morality in mind. And especially if we are in the covenant relationship with God, we tend to want to impress others. That's going to be some of the lessons for today. The other lesson is boundaries. If you don't believe me, I believe very strongly that boundaries are important. Boundaries are a part of God's creation. I love the passages in the book of Job where God says to the ocean, you will go this far and no further. I liked it when I was a kid that there was an outer boundary for me to be a part of. I probably said I didn't like the boundaries, but they've actually done studies on this where they took kids in a playground that had a very defined boundary, and the kids felt comfortable going all the way to the boundary. But when they took the fence off, the kids tended to stay in the middle because there was no boundary. We tend to like it. Now, eventually there comes a point in our life when we hate boundaries. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me how to live. This is my life. I get to choose what I want to do with this. And it's especially difficult being in the covenant relationship with God, because God has boundaries. And some of those boundaries, society absolutely abhors, but God uplifts. You're also going to find, especially in the second half of this, some boundaries, especially when it comes to sexuality, especially in marital relationships. God has boundaries that are important. And how we respect those boundaries is often a direct correlation of how our relationship with God is going. The stronger our relationship with God, the tendency to follow God's boundaries are there. The less relationship we have, the more we think the boundaries are more just like moral suggestions. So today, as we go through this, as I was prepping for this, I was like, wow, there's going to be some tough stuff said and some material that's difficult. But remember, I ain't the one saying it. And this is God. Now, we're going to make sure and tackle another tough subject that we often hit, which is, what is the value of the Old Testament law for a New Testament believer? There are certain laws that we as New Testament believers don't follow, right? Anyone here enjoy shrimp? Oh, I do. Anyone here enjoy bacon?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Those are all prohibited. And we've got to figure out why God prohibited them, and then how does this material here hit our lives now? So let's go through some of these laws. Some of the laws, I think you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. We should definitely do that. And some of them you're like, I don't know if I like this one. The question we'll be asking is, why does God give the law in the first place? All right, here we go. Deuteronomy 22. If you see your brother's ox or sheep straying, do not ignore it, but be sure to take it back to him. If the brother does not live near you, or if you do not know who he is, and so brother obviously doesn't mean my biological brother. This would be my brother in the community, my family of faith. If you don't know who it is, take it home with you and keep it until he comes looking for it. Then give it back to him. Do the same if you find your brother's donkey or his cloak or anything he loses. Do not ignore it. So if you find $100 on the ground, the goal is to hopefully get it back to someone who is the owner of that. Now it becomes difficult. I know that we live now in a society that's very compact. We have a lot of people in a lot of spaces, and so it's a little more difficult to find those things. But you can see where the abuses would happen. If you're hanging out, you're at your farm, and all of a sudden some cow comes roaming onto your property, you're thinking to yourself, well, this is fantastic. Free burgers tonight. This is wonderful, very valuable. And then you look and you realize, oh, that cow has a branding on it, and that branding belongs to my neighbor, maybe even 3, 5, 10 miles down the road. Right? We've all watched Yellowstone, right? Everyone watched Yellowstone. We've all gotten accustomed to this idea of cows and who they belong to. If something comes to you and it's not yours and you know it belongs to someone else, give it back. The temptation, especially if no one is looking, is you go, oh, I didn't know. I didn't know that actually belonged to him. And so you take it, you brand it, and then you pass it off as yourself. I think most of us would say this kind of lands in the category of the stealing, right? We don't steal from other people. People okay with this law? This seems kind of nice, right? Yeah. Who are you when no one's looking? If you follow after God and you see something that can be rectified, even if no one is looking, make sure and take care of it. And then similar things to verse 4, if you see your brother's donkey or his ox fallen on the road, do not ignore it. Help him get it to its feet. So, and it's interesting, some commentators said, yeah, maybe he's overloaded. More, I think it's like if he fell into a ditch or he, you know, stumbled in some way or is now off the side, you go and you help, right? These sound good? These are pretty typical stuff. Again, it's easy if someone needs help and no one does anything and you see it, the temptation is if no one is looking at you, you tend to simply ignore. Now, I understand that this is also a lot based on gender. Men, we have a hard time with this. If we can get away with stuff, we will. I hate to confess certain sins in front of my wife, but there have been times where she's come and she's like, Mark, did you notice the piece of trash on the ground? And usually what I do go, what? What? Now, and there have been times, and I'm really sorry, honey, I'm trying to do better. There have been times I'm at home and I'm by myself and I'm walking to the kitchen and I see the trash and I go, well, Heather's not here. You know what? Yeah, I'm just going to keep on walking. And it's easy as a guy to ignore when someone is in need. Now, women, you guys, you're amazing. You jump right on it. If Heather finds a piece of trash and I'm not home, guess what Heather does? She picks it up, right? I don't, and I'm sorry, but I'm trying to do that. Right. But this is also in life. I think I've used this example, but when we've had people stuck on the side of the road, who is the one who is always telling me you should pull over and help them? It's not me. I got better things to do. I'm like the priest or the Levite that passes along on the other side. There's my wife. You should stop and help them. Guys, I think this is important for us. If someone is in need, the easy thing to do is just simply ignore it, especially if no one's looking. Instead, always being ready to help our neighbor. That's why Jesus said the parable of the Good Samaritan. Wanted to make sure that we're helping. All right, verse 5. Let's get into some controversial topics. Oh, and then we get to talk about birds and eggs and whether we should kill them or not. Oh, verse 5. Yes. A woman must not wear men's clothing, nor a man wear woman's clothing, for the Lord your God detests anyone who does this.
I gotta say it.
Oh, but what do you got, Jody?
What about Halloween?
What about Halloween? Yeah. It is true. If you look at a very old yearbook at Concordia University in Irvine, there was a Halloween dance when I wore a dress. Have you never seen that picture?
Oh my God. So did you break that
rule? Maddie's going to look it up.
You're going to look it up? You have all the old yearbooks? Yeah. Yeah. And I believe the caption reads something, because Heather then had pants and a vest and she took her hair and put it in a ponytail. And then, there was a day when I had long, luxurious locks and they
with lots of
it.
Curls, was so pretty. Good.
And I had a Marine hit on me. It was at a dance at Pendleton. And there's some guy and he was like, and I'm like. And his buddy comes over to him and he starts whacking me. And I could see him mouth, that's it. God, and he said, whoa, right? So anyway, and I believe the caption reads something like, well, here's Mark and Heather, or is that Heather and Mark? I think that's the caption, something like that. So again, now the question is, did we break this commandment by doing, what's the purpose of this commandment? What's the purpose of this law? The purpose of this law is that God set up certain boundaries that we've got to be very careful about. Now I know that this becomes challenging because the question now is, what's the definition of men's clothes and women's clothes, right?
Unisex.
And yeah, a lot of stuff is, well, I remember working at a church previous to Searchlight, and there was a young lady in the church, and at the school, they required them to, the women had to wear skirts and shirts, and she didn't want to, she wanted to wear shorts, but only the boys wore shorts. And she's like, well, the girls wear shorts too. Girls sometimes wear shorts, right? So what's the difference between men's clothing and women's clothing? That is not what this is talking about. This is talking about something else when it comes to bending the gender differences to such a point that we wish we were a different gender than we actually are. Now I know that this is also based on how old you are. I believe all the older people would simply say, yes, if you are a guy, then you are a guy. You are a female, then you are a female, and there's really no getting around that. Society has now told us there is no difference, but I just simply beg to differ. I simply beg to differ because based on what Scripture says, God created boundaries. He created male and female. He created humans and animals. He created land and sea and sky, and he was big on boundaries. I think that is the reason why the church, most of the mainstream churches still take a viewpoint and position of if you are a man, I'm going to say something that you'll probably not hear elsewhere, but I believe it. If you are a man, celebrate that you're a man. God created you as a man. Celebrate that. I know people are like, wait a second, I don't know if I can celebrate, I'm a man, toxic masculinity, I get all that. But God created you as a man, you are a man, celebrate that you're a man. And if you're a woman, God created you as a woman, celebrate that you are a woman. It would be the same as anything else. If God created you tall, then be tall. Celebrate that you are tall, Joshua. Celebrate that you are a giant. If you are short, celebrate that you are the setter on the volleyball team. Or a libero, is that right?
Yes, yeah. We wear a different color.
You wear a different color shirt and everything, right? Yeah, short people, right? Yeah, short people are great. If God gave you blonde hair, celebrate your blonde hairedness. If God gave you curly hair, celebrate your curly hairedness. Stop trying to straighten it. If you have straight hair, celebrate your straight hairedness. If God created you, and God creates things that are good, then we celebrate that. And I believe that I think we need to stop trying to manufacture other ways to express ourselves and instead just celebrate who you are. I'll say this even for ethnicities. If God created you and you are Hispanic, celebrate. If God created you and you are black, celebrate. If God created you as just a simple old white person, celebrate. God created you, and God created boundaries, and we've got to be very careful about constantly trying to push those boundaries. Instead of saying, I want to be able to do what anyone else does, celebrate what has God uniquely given to me that I can celebrate. We say this all the time with giftedness, why not with everything else? I'm very angry that God did not give me the gift of a good voice to sing. Instead, he just gave me a very loud, obnoxious voice that is really good to speak in. And then I listed all these other great singers, and I'm like, that's just amazing, but I don't have that gift. Now, I could be sitting around and being angry about that, or I'm going to say, you know what? God created me in a special way. I'm going to celebrate who God created me to be. So if you are a man, celebrate you're a man. If you are a woman, celebrate you're a woman. Be careful about trying to constantly bend those things so that you are something that you should not be. Is the live stream going well still?
Low battery.
Jeez, I tell you.
Today's rough.
Today's been a rough day. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. All right. Verse 6. What do you do when you come across a bird and its nest with its eggs in it? Now this, all my bleeding heart bird lovers, rise and unite in power. Here we go. If you come across a bird's nest beside the road, either in a tree or on the ground, and the mother is sitting on the young or on the eggs, do not take the mother with the young. You may take the young, but be sure to let the mother go so that it may go well with you and you may have a long life. Mm-hmm. So if you come across, what's the reason behind this? If you take the mother, then there's no chance, and you kill the mother because you're going to, you know, cook it that evening, there'll be no chance for eggs and further young. If you take the young, then the mother can still reproduce. It's so funny because I come across this passage, I'm thinking to myself, is this just not one of the dumbest passages you've ever read in your life? Why would God even care about birds? God shows the depth of his love to his creation. As Jesus said, if two sparrows are sold for a penny, If a bird doesn't fall to the ground dead without the knowledge of the Father, how much more will he care about you? You are way more valuable than birds. It's a reminder to us, as God, he looks at all of his creation, loves all of his creation, but then we go through the boundaries and we go through the order of creation, and when was humans, when were they created? On day six? And all along, it was good, it was good, it was God, it was good. God created dogs, they were good. God created cats, that was okay. All right, I guess I'll allow. God creates all of these things, and then he comes to God creating man and woman, and what does he say? It is very good. You are way more valuable than any bird or any animal. That's how valuable that God sets up laws here about us interacting with birds to remind us of his incredible depth of love, safe as possible. Yes. Well, I say so because then we can get a little bit of survival of the fittest. We can weed out the bad people, right?
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. No, don't do that. We put up boundaries. We put up guardrails so that people don't just fall and die. This is, again, a love for your neighbor. Again, this one's not a law that I think anyone have a problem with this law? No, I think we like this. God wants us to love our neighbor. God wants us to love creation. God wants you to love you for who you are. This is the communication coming through this. Verse 9, do not plant two kinds of seed in your vineyard. If you do, not only the crops you plant, but also the fruit of the vineyard will be defiled. Do not plow with an ox and a donkey yoked together. Do not wear clothes of wool and linen woven together. All right, so everyone look at the person in front of you and see if you can find their tag and see if they're wearing a cotton polyester blend. Yeah, but I'm a little sweaty, so it's kind of gross. Is anyone here wearing cotton polyester blend?
Pretty sure.
Yeah, I think pretty much all of you are. Or, yeah. Is anyone wearing 100%
cotton polyester right now?
Cotton polyester. Michael, do not wear clothing made of two different types. You have just violated. What are these laws all about? Is God really interested in if you have a grape and a wheat field? I mean, I think a grape and a wheat field, wouldn't that be perfect? You get both bread and wine. Seems kind of appropriate for me. What? Why not plow with an ox and a donkey? What's the problem with that? Why should we not wear clothes with this blend in mind? If you know the reasons why, you will see once again it's all about boundaries. First of all, the boundary of greed. Who here is greedy? You guys are liars, come on.
Greedy?
Yeah, you're all greedy. You are all greedy people. I'm greedy, right? If I have the chance to plant something and I get two types of crops, even if it ruins the ground, who cares? I'm making lots of money. It's a boundary for greed. And then what about this whole do not plow with an ox and donkey yoked together? First of all, that's just common sense, right? Ox, donkey, right? It's the lines are not going to be straight. It has nothing to do with that. I'll give you a hint. One of those animals is clean, and one of them is unclean. There's a boundary that God says about how we live our lives, and doing and binding these two together. That you've got to be careful that you are not unequally yoking two people together. Jeff, is that what you were going to say? Yeah. Jeff is always looking for New Testament tie-ins. And this is exactly what he was thinking of when he says, do not be unequally yoked. It's not about, can you make straight lines with it? I mean, almost every farmer back in those days would have said, well, duh, like this is a dumb idea. No, God is saying be careful of your distinctions between clean and unclean.
Mark, it's like manufacturing and also pure.
Yes, there is a sense of purity and I'm careful on something like that. But yeah, there's also just a common sense that goes with that. And so that's why the writer then says, do not be unequally yoked. Now, how do we apply that nowadays? Well, for those that are believers in the faith, you should date and marry someone who is a believer in the faith. Now, are there exceptions to these rules? I see it all the time. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I would caution anyone who does evangelism dating, right? Wow, that girl's hot. She's not a Christian, but maybe I'll invite her to church and she will come to faith in Jesus Christ. That's called evangelism dating. Don't do it, it's bad. Instead, find people that are already there. Find people who are part of your tribe so that when the time comes, it will go well with you. Long-term plans, children, retirement, all these things, especially if one is tied in with the church and one is not, things typically go wrong for the one who is a believer. Let me see if I can give you that. I think I've done this example on an entire sermon, right? Like, let's say, Heather, come on up here. You are my unbelieving person for the time being. Right? Let's say, you know, I saw Heather, right? She was super cute. And she was awesome. But she wasn't a believer. And I think to myself, but maybe I can get Heather up to my level. Now, question is, who has it easier? Is it easier for Heather to pull me down or me to pull her up?
Her to pull you down.
Yeah, if she wants to yank me down, and I don't want to break an ankle. Yeah, but if we are, no, I'm not going to make you stand on the chair. I'm
not
going to do that, right? We have to get our five spotters to be like, hey, make sure she doesn't fall. There's a reason why. Now, has there been times that I have seen people get married and they, in fact, do work it out? Yeah. Have I seen people who've gotten married, and after they got married, the believing spouse was able to convince the unbelieving spouse to come? Oh, absolutely. That was my family. My mom was a strong believer, and my dad was not. My dad was an East Coast Catholic, which usually meant you don't really need to go to church. My mom would constantly be talking to about the faith. And did it happen? Yeah, I believe as the years went on, my dad actually got involved in the church, understood the church, and became a believer. But let me tell you, there was some hard times during all of that. We don't want to be unequally yoked. Now, can it work out? Sure. Should we just throw caution to the wind? I always advise against it. Because we should. So there's these boundaries of relationships. And then, do not wear clothes of wool and linen woven together. Now, this one was fun because I'd always taken this in one respect, but I didn't realize there was actually a deeper meaning to this that I had never seen before until this past week. There was a group of people that God required to wear clothing made of both linen and wool together. Required them. The Levites. I believe this is just another one of those boundaries that come out again. That there's a boundary between laity and called workers, people who work in a professional capacity for God. Now, does that mean God doesn't, that God likes me more than he likes you because I'm up here speaking and you're not? Oh, absolutely not. I have said it over and over and over again. The ministry that all of you have is way more effective than my ministry. I've said it over and over again. I hang around Christians literally all day long. But you don't. The ministry you have is super powerful and important. If everyone was a pastor, there'd be no distinction. Instead, we have distinctions. We have boundaries. We have roles that we play. Roles that are important. I was reminded of that last night when Heather and I were cooking dinner. We all had our role. Like, wait, what? No, dude, why are you worried? It was good.
I was worried.
You were worried. Yeah, I bring up you and cooking, and you like freak out like I'm going to say something bad. You can come ask me about stories. I'll tell you a lot of stories, especially the one about the chocolate torts. But I won't say that one. Anyway, she and I are cooking. We're making pollo asada. We got some street tacos. We got this and that. And she's doing this, and I'm doing that. What happens? We each knew our role. We each knew what we had to do, and we just did it. Because we respected each other's roles. Here at church, when it comes to youth ministry, I defer to Heather. When it comes to preschool ministry, Man, I tell Chris what to do because I'm in charge. No, are you kidding me? Chris is in charge. I walk over there, I'm like, hi, I'm just the pastor. She's the top dog there. When I think of the roles that we play, I think so many of us want to blur the boundaries, we end up in a lot of trouble. Verse 12. Make tassels on the four corners of the cloak you wear. I'm not going to talk, that one totally comes out of nowhere. The idea behind that is to always be reminded of who you are in Jesus Christ. Wearing the tassels on the ground was a way that you would be reminded of who God is. It would be similar to us wearing a cross or having a tattoo of a cross or a Bible verse or something like that, or memorizing Bible or having something as a sticker on our car. Making the tassels was a reminder that God guides your footsteps in your life. But then, what did people start doing with the tassels on the corners? Well, my tassels are bigger than your tassels. It's because I'm more holy than you. And people started comparing tassel size and tassel length. And then people stopped remembering why the tassels were there in the first place. They were there to remind us of God. Remember the boundaries. All right, this next section, more boundaries and marriage violations. Some of these you're going to be like, yep, sounds good. I accept. I concur. Let's do it. If a man takes a wife and after lying with her, dislikes her and slanders her and gives her a bad name, saying, I married this woman, but when I approached her, I did not find proof of her virginity, then the girl's father and mother shall bring proof that she was a virgin to the town elders at the gates. The girl's father will say to the elders, I gave my daughter in marriage to this man, but he dislikes her. Now he has slandered her and said, I do not find your daughter to be a virgin, but here is the proof of my daughter's virginity. Then her parents shall display the cloth. Sorry, it's interesting. Then her parents shall display the cloth before the elders of the town, and the elders shall take the man and punish him. They shall find him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the girl's father, because this man has given an Israelite virgin a bad name. She shall continue to be his wife. He must not divorce her as long as he lives. Does this sound like a good law?
No.
Right? Okay, so we got to remember what's happening. God wants boundaries when it comes to our sexuality. What are the boundaries that he wants and that people have lived under for a very long period of time is to be a virgin when you're married. When you are first married, that is when sexuality happens between a man and a woman in a committed relationship that is a marital relationship. And this was so important. And women, let me tell you, the power that you wielded was incredible. Because if you had, in fact, kept yourself as a virgin until that time period, then when sex happened and there was a breaking of the hymen, then you had that blood discharge, and I'm sorry, I'm really glad we don't do this nowadays, also good I don't have any girls or daughters, you would take the cloth and it would be given to your parents, and your parents would keep it in a chest. You know why? To protect you. God hates it when women are slandered and when women are treated poorly. I know that sometimes I think the Old Testament gets a bad rap, or Christianity or Jewish beliefs get a bad rap because it's not very woman-friendly, but it actually very is. The idea behind this is if a guy just was like, I don't like you anymore, and I need to divorce you, and you know what, I'm just going to tell everyone you were a slut, and that you had sex before we were married, and it would cause her to not only have problems getting another husband, she would probably be destitute, lived with her parents for the rest of her life. Can you imagine living with your parents for the rest of your life as a divorced woman and you're like, no one wants me, no one loves me, no one cares for me? God said, guys, we do not slander women just because we don't like them. And if there's issues in the marriage, you go and you seek help and you go and you seek guidance. Because if the man ends up slandering and the parents of the woman, and this is also super important, why? Because I know this happens, right? The push happens, the time is coming up, we're about to get married, right? Well, I mean, we're so close to getting married, why don't we just have sex, right? Oh, you know what? I love you, babe, so much. You know what? Of course we're together forever. We have these viewpoints. Women, can I tell you how much power you have to just simply say no? Guys, how about this? Let's not do it until we're married.
Okay, question.
Oh, yes, please, Jody.
I'm going to say it.
Okay.
You're talking about the woman, what about the man being a virgin?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's kind of the point behind this, too. Now, the problem is with a guy, can guys prove their virginity?
They can't point it out. He's not pointing it out.
Well, the idea behind this is if the man slanders the woman, and then the woman shows the proof that she was a virgin, the guy would have to pay 100 shekels of silver. And you're wondering, how much is 100 shekels of silver? Did anyone ask that? I did. I found it out. It's kind of tough to tell, but it's roughly 6 years of a salary.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Is God serious about making sure that this woman is taken care of? And then, and this is tough because this sounds bad, like, and you may never be allowed to divorce her for the rest of your life. You got to remember, where is daughter and son-in-law sleeping? Where do they live? They live with her parents or his parents, and what are they going to be doing every day? I can't believe you did that. Like, this guy's going to be like having his head down, like, I really messed up. There was a much more communal, and I get it. I know that sexuality is very private nowadays. It used to not be that way. It used to be that we helped and we loved and we cared for one another in those sexual boundaries to make sure that, because if a woman did give in, let's say she gave in to temptation, she's betrothed to a guy, they're about to get married, he's like, come on baby, I love you very much. See, she says sure, and then they have sex. She has no protection to prove her virginity later on. She'd be like, nope, I ain't giving you that. We're waiting till the wedding night, baby. And then you get the bloody sheet, because that's my insurance policy. God is protecting the woman. Now, what about adultery? I love this one. Where am I at?
20,
thank you. If, however, the charge is true and no proof of the girl's virginity can be found, she shall be brought to the door of her father's house, and there the men of town shall stone her to death. Ooh. She has done a disgraceful thing in Israel by being promiscuous, but still in her father's house. You must purge the evil from among you. I believe these are the verses that the kids are focusing on down in kids' church right now. No, they're not. They all practice rocks. Like, let's start getting it. Yeah.
No.
And again, the problem, and Jody, I get the point. What about the guy? There is a balance that comes out in the next verse. And so let's focus on this. Verse 22, if a man is found sleeping with another man's wife, both the man who slept with her and the woman must die. He must purge evil from Israel. So that informs the New Testament story when they caught a woman in adultery, and they grab her and bring her to Jesus. And we pointed out before, the first question I always have is, where's the dude, right? My theory, because I'm a conspiracy theorist at heart, my conspiracy theory is that the guy was in on it from the whole time. And it was the buddies that were like, you get her, we will watch, we'll grab her and take you, but we'll protect you. And that's why it's very interesting. Jesus didn't, I would have loved it if he would have said, yeah, where's the guy first? But then he also is reminding us too of what do we think about this. The idea is not specifically that you're always carrying this thing out. It is supposed to be a deterrent. But if you have, in fact, messed up and had sex before marriage, or you have committed adultery, there are no rocks coming your way. Jesus says, well, yep, the law says you can stone her. That is a possibility. So go ahead. If you have not sinned, you may go ahead and throw the first rock. And again, I find it fascinating that Jesus did not throw a stone. Because Jesus could have thrown a stone, right? But he didn't. It's the depth and the and the love that God has for us, he realizes that these boundaries and these laws that he is setting up to try to protect us and protect society, you and I have a propensity, a tendency to break them. And he is not standing there with a rock ready to destroy you. There is grace and there is mercy offered. We get another situation. What happens if a rape occurs? Verse 23, if a man happens to meet in a town a virgin pledged to be, the betrothal. And this one's tough. We don't really have anything akin to a betrothal. We kind of have an engagement type thing. But back then, the engagement was as good as the marriage, right? Remember Jesus's father, Mary, was found to be with child. The natural assumption, she must have had sex to have this child. But Joseph was a righteous man and didn't want her dead, and so was going to divorce her quietly. So again, betrothal. So this next one's all about betrothal. If a man happens to meet a woman in town, virgin pledged to be married, and he sleeps with her, he shall take both of them to the gate of that town and stone them to death. The girl, because she was in a town and did not scream for help, and the man, because he violated another man's wife, and must purge evil from among you. And you got to remember, like, places to have sex were not, like, vast and numerous, right? Young women tended to be under their father and mother's care at home. So if something happened inside that house, it had to be a heck of a lot more sneaky than what happens nowadays. But, verse 25, if out in the country a man happens to meet a girl pledged to be married and rapes her, only the man who has done this shall die. Do nothing to the girl. She has committed no sin deserving death. This case is like that of someone who attacks and murders his neighbor. For the man found the girl out in the country, and though the betrothed girl screamed, there was no one to rescue her. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this gets into a sensitive subject when it comes to rape. If you have been raped, there is no judgment, though you live with that. There is no sin that's committed, though you feel dirty and disgusting. God looks at you and sees someone beautiful, invaluable, and worthy. And that man should die. And if that man doesn't die, Jesus says, I'll die for you to forgive. Now this next one, we're going to get into some translation issues. So let me see if I can help you, because the first read of this one, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to preach this. Maybe I'll just skip over this paragraph. But here we go. If a man happens to meet a virgin who is not pledged to be married and rapes her and they are discovered, he shall pay the girl's father 50 shekels of silver. He must marry the girl, for he has violated her. He can never divorce her as long as he lives. Okay, so does anyone have an alternate translation to what I just read? What it does, the word rapes.
It's about 1 1/4 pounds.
Oh, no, I'm looking at the word. So
this one says violated.
Violates her. Violates her, okay.
New Living Translation.
What else?
Seizes her and lies with her.
Yeah, seizes her and lies with her. That's definitely getting closer to the meaning. I actually had to look this one up. So if you've ever wondered, is Hebrew helpful? Hebrew is super helpful. I'll tell you the first thing is, the word for rape here is not the same word as the rape from the previous thing. You can look it up. It's a totally different word. This word has more of the idea of being pressuring in seduction. So if a guy is pressuring and is seductive, right, and immediately we start thinking of that beautiful, wonderful Christmas song, Baby, It's Cold Outside. It's cold outside, come on, you wanna have a drink? There's this pressure, there's this seduction that's supposed to happen. And it was very interesting. I went down a rabbit hole on this one, and it definitely opened my eyes, because I actually typed in, I was like, is seduction and rape the same thing? And I think there's definitely a lot of people nowadays believe seduction and rape are the same thing. But here, God is making the distinction that if there is pressuring that's coming, and then there's an acquiescing, because it says here that they are discovered. So the idea is, she's not screaming for help. She's not upset. She's just allowing. And again, this gets difficult. I understand. But back in there, the boundaries were super clear. You couldn't often get very close to someone else in that manner. If this guy is seducing you and you end up having sex with him, then you're going to pay the father 50 shekels of silver. How much is 50 shekels of silver?
6 years.
About 3 years. Well, because 100 shekels, right, from the previous one, so about 3 years' salary. So that God says, look, woman, you did allow in some respects. There wasn't a cry for help. There was maybe it was even a reluctance, but it was ultimately an acquiescence to what was happening. We wouldn't call that a rape. We would call that a seduction. Women, say no. Men, knock it off. Oh my gosh, I swear. I read this stuff, and again, I'm definitely of that whole viewpoint of, boys will be boys. No, that's... Cowards will be cowards is what that is. Men are men. Men are honoring and respectful. Men love and cherish and honor and protect. That's why I think we can actually curb the sexuality of America if both genders will step up and say, enough is enough, I'm going to stop. But it's difficult, I understand. Because there is a fine line that's going there, and that's why I'd rather see men step up and stop being, I was going to say a bad word, but I remember this is being recorded. Stop being that way. Love, cherish, honor, and respect women. And women, if you are violated, if you are raped, remember the depth of love God has for you. That even if every man fails you, and every man is a pig and a slime and ugly and disgusting, there is one man who loves you and is willing to die for you. And he did, and man was Jesus Christ. So again, do you see kind of the difference in this? And also, it's really hard to say, yeah, if he rapes her and then she's forced to live with him and like marry him and... No, there's it's a different word, it's a different thought that's going on here. And then, I don't know, should we even verse 30?
Yeah.
A man is not to marry his father's wife.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, I don't think this is, you know, like a biological situation, but yeah, shouldn't be having sex with your stepmother. Well, nowadays, I used to be, you would read stuff like this, and people would be like, yeah, that's right. But how many industries are now based on sexual stuff that at one time would be deemed completely wrong? No, God says, this is how it's supposed to be. God puts boundaries in place. God loves you so much that boundary is supposed to be there for your protection, for your honor, and for you to live your life. And I pray that we would see those boundaries in our sexuality, in our lives, in our genders, in how we love other people. But never forget this. I think most of us are just like that adulterous woman, or we're like that adulterous man who's hiding away. We feel ashamed, we feel disgusting, and we feel dirty. Jesus does not throw any stones. Instead, he says, I love you and I've died for you. Jeff?
Do you think that was Hannah's sin?
It's the same word, the whole idea about uncovering the nakedness. Yeah, so if you want to, again, you read some of the Old Testament, and who are the ones who mostly violated all these laws? There's a ton of Israelites did that. Yeah, so you read Noah, right? So if you don't know the story about Noah and Ham, Noah gets drunk Like, then you've been stuck on a boat for, you know, a year. All you got are animals, and then you get to there, you, first thing he grows is a vineyard, gets drunk, and then there's something sexual that happens between Noah and his son Ham. Same thing happens with Lot and his daughters. So this is not something new, it's something very old. And God says, put the boundaries, there's boundaries in place, people. Stop violating, stop trying to push those boundaries. Understand what God has done for you. Let's pray. Gracious Lord, this is really